Welcome to Spaghetti Launchers, a world-building podcast where we throw spaghetti at the wall, and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ethan. Today's episode, we're talking about the afterlife. The tone and energy of my voice is radically departed from today's topic.
Yes, you went in with a whole lot of energy for a very down or very up topic. You know, afterlives could be positive.
Oh, yeah. Just Kool-Aided man and Kool-Aid man. Kool-Aided man? Kool-Aid manned my way into this one.
You know, afterlives are inherently, you know, it's like death is quote unquote negative in the real world and in spec fic, but it doesn't have to be. And the afterlives can be cool. They can be upbeat.
They're often the way that a lot of religions work is to create an Edenic or a paradise version of the afterlife for those who do well, and a punishment, a good place and a bad place.
Yes. The good place is such a great exploration of what does afterlife look like.
It is. I'm not saying it isn't, but the last season always sort of frustrated me.
Really? I
love because last season. Yes, but it's the, in my head, the place where you, the fact that, you know, Lisa Kudrow's character, spoiler, started talking about getting bored and depressed and vapid there, it's like, well, then that's not really a good place. Right.
Yes.
That's I see the point that they were trying to make, but it fell a little bit flat for me because then it sort of defeated the purpose.
I don't really want to go too far down that rabbit hole, so we'll leave that at that. That is a interesting conversation to be had, maybe off air. As you know, religion is usually like creating a version of an afterlife that people have faith in.
Right.
But we want to talk about afterlives that are the
objectively real.
Yeah, like the matter of fact afterlife.
This is what happens. It doesn't necessarily matter who created it, who controls it, or
yeah,
why. It's just, it is what happens.
Yes.
And how that might impact the world or not.
And I think you can still have that element of faith-based actors really leaning into afterlife as a thing to be, like as a cultural touchstone. Like I'm really thinking a lot as we're doing this about the scenes from Mad Max
war
boys all shout like witness me as they're like, you know, getting to quote unquote Valhalla, and like, uh-huh. You know, the idea that it's this, the virtue to die because you want to get the afterlife that you want. Like,
right.
Even if you know what's happening, you can still have elements of that.
Sure.
Rather than, it doesn't have to be faith. It can just be like, oh, we have faith in X or Y, and we do this because we know what the afterlife is. So we want to make sure that we get the version of that we like.
Mm-hmm.
But the afterlife could also just be morally neutral and have no good or bad. It's just the idea that nothing happens when you die, that many people ascribe to.
Like, just neutral.
Yeah, it's neutral.
It just ends.
It just ends. It just is.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, I mean, there's not like a ton of spec fic interesting quote unquote afterlives because you end the story before that point. Like Star Wars is the only thing I can really think of that it has an actual impact on the story with the ghosts of
the Force ghosts,
the Force ghosts
or that,
back.
Or in it's like the world beyond or wherever they go in Ahsoka and they meet Anakin again. It doesn't matter. But the point is, there is that other force world where it's basically where all the force spirits go. I also am a fan of any, and I know they're different things, but I'm a fan in any video game where you get to go to the afterlife or the underworld as a DLC. And
sure,
it's just always fun to see how they've structured it. What do you know, in Assassin's Creed Odyssey, you got to go to both the Fields of Elysium and Hades.
Yeah.
And check those out and play around in there. And that's just really fun.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many situations where it's just like, oh, you're just ghosts. You know, like ghosts just kind of linger around. They exist. Spirits
like in,
exist.
Stardust, the movie with all the ghosts floating around.
Sure. I wasn't going with a specific example. I was just thinking generally. But yeah, Star Wars.
Yeah.
Sure. I don't remember that scene. But yeah, it's pretty generic.
Second.
Let's go ahead and get into some of our menu descriptions. What noodles have you come prepared with? How would you describe it in three words?
What if Baldur's Gate 3 was real?
That's not three words, but okay.
Yeah. Describe your dish for me, Kyle.
Spectator mode.
I think we might have gone similar places. Why don't you kick us off this week?
This is a combination of two concepts. One is when you die in a shooter video game. in a multiplayer shooter video game, and you get to spectate your allies and people, like your teammates, and see what they're doing and monitor, and like, and you know, you can give information and whatever. And then two, the idea that what if your ancestors are watching, you, and you know, they are keeping an eye on you after they die.
The great kings of the past look down on us from those stars.
When you die, you are spectating the life of an individual who was alive still. And it doesn't have to be a family member, but it is somebody that exists.
Interesting.
And they can tell that you're monitoring them. They know who, they know how many people are monitoring. They don't know the identity of those people. They just feel a presence of spirits watching down on them and actively being aware of what they're thinking and what they're doing.
That's invasive.
Yeah, but they can't act on it. They're just kind of...
It's just the world.
And it is this like this regulatory element to keep people's conscious kind of in line that, oh, your ancestors are watching down on you. Mm. And where it creates some interesting tension is that you know how many people are watching you because you can kind of feel it. You like you have a general sense, but also others do because you basically give off an aura. I don't know exactly what it looks like, but you have some sort of aura that tells people that person's being watched by a lot of souls, or no aura indicating that maybe one or two, but not really anything of significance, is watching them. And if you have a lot of souls watching you, people see you, your aura is there, you are, one, a little bit more visible, but two, people start to question, why are so many people watching you? What are you doing that is so interesting that people want to watch that? Are you up to something? Are you scheming? Is this like a drama that people are really intrigued by? Are you a, did you touch a lot of people's lives while, you know, over time, and people are really keeping up with you, and because they have, you know, gratitude or something to you, and you've just, you're well connected, much like, you know, someone who shows like, you know, 1600 people show up to someone's funeral. It's like, well, what do? That kind of thing. And you get, like you can just create a mechanism that wants to enforce society to kind of be more boring or be more secretive because people start to try to hide what they're up to so they don't get the aura.
So first question, can the spirits watching you mess with your life?
No.
Are they haunting you?
No.
No, they're just watching.
It is only...
It's
haunting you in that you just know how many they are and the conscience... play that can do.
Okay.
That you start to get anxious or stressed out.
But they're not opening doors.
They can't actively affect the world in any way other than this.
No beds are rattling.
No.
Cool.
They're not ghosts.
Second question. So when I go, if I die, I become an afterlife. And let's say I enter spectator mode and I run, you know, I've never met you before, but then I see you walking along the street. If I look at you, do I know this is Kyle?
You're in spectator mode?
I am the spirit.
They are not free roaming. They pick a person and they see through their eyes and they experience all that person's thoughts, emotions, history, everything. They get everything from this individual and all the data on this individual.
Got it.
Up until this point, and that's all they get. They don't then get to like go over here and get like a free camera looking around that door to see who's going to answer it, you know, when they knock. They don't get anyone else's perspective. They only see from this person's angle.
Right.
So they also get all the empathy of, I know why Ethan is behaving this way because I'm only seeing Ethan's view.
Right.
But I've also seen that person's view. So I, at some point, and I could switch over there right now.
Sure.
And I could do it real time, bounce it back and forth to see these different two people interact, but I'm probably not gonna because it would just be annoying.
But so let's say that I'm seeing from your point of view. Can I also see your future?
No.
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 Okay.
No, they are not future seeking.
Okay. Because that would be...
No, that's stupid.
Well, I don't think that's stupid. I think that would be interesting because then it would be, imagine you just start seeing your numbers go up. You know, I've got 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. You start getting paranoid like, oh, am I going to die really interestingly?
That's interesting.
And terribly and horrifically? Because
I think,
why are so it is part of the shame, and this is more of a lore question than
it's an interesting question because it's not a lore question. It actually has impacts. Like, what if someone's going to become, like, what if someone is a bastard of the king?
Sure.
And everybody, and they don't know that, and all of a sudden, but they have like 1,000 people watching them as like a stable boy, and like, what the fuck is that about?
Right.
And people start to ask questions. It's like, oh, that's the heir to the throne that we like, and you can get some and we know in the future that person's gonna like lead a rebellion, and we're gonna watch the whole thing.
It's like, this show is gonna be great.
Yeah, and then but then it's like, oh well, then consequences will happen because people will be like, why the fuck is that stable boy like horrific?
Yeah,
what's going on?
Horrific is a great word.
Yeah,
I think you made it. Is it real? If it's not real, it should be. It's a great word.
Well, if it's not real, we have officially coined it, and we will be trademarking that. Because that's how that works.
Hell yes.
Yeah. But like, people are like, what the fuck's up with that stable boy? And then they might go kill that stable boy to be like, right, we need to prevent this uprising or whatever. So yeah, it's not stupid. I don't love it from, I like, it's, because I like keeping it contained to, it's only guilt, shame, internal processes that affect behavior, and not, oh, a bunch of people are watching you because of your future. It gives away the game, and it gives these souls too much impact on the world, where I want them to be neutral, and it is it's the living people who are, their reaction to it that gives them power.
Well, so, and here's my point, is that it could be that the spirits might know the future, but the world of the living, they don't know what the spirits know.
No, that's exactly the point. Yes.
Yeah, but I'm saying the spirits might know, because I'm trying to think what would draw spirits to an individual from the spirit's perspective.
I think the spirits can communicate amongst themselves.
Yeah.
So they are telling people, this feed's interesting.
Yeah.
Come watch this. This guy's up to some shit. It's not like that, like it's literally just like, you know, just go on Twitch, you know. It's people just like, the people are attracted to the people who like, the numbers are higher, and then there might be interesting stories happening off the beaten path that aren't getting attention, but these spirits aren't like, so a couple spirits go over there like, oh, this is really cool, and then they go tell other spirits like, it's really interesting over here, you can come check it out.
Yeah.
Or say nothing at all, because they're like, oh, I found the guy who's actually plotting a really interesting thing, and I don't want anyone to know because I want it to happen.
Yeah.
I don't want to give the game away. That's why like, I think they should have minimum power, and they're really just truly spectators.
Yeah.
Where it's the audience, like the traction that the audience has, like, you know, on some people will affect their behavior.
Sure.
Like the charismatic, funny knight who's really like, you know, the bell of the ball kind of, you know, that's the person who they're going to watch as like a default, because, you know, it's pretty basic levels of interesting.
Mm.
But he's not actually that interesting, like he's not doing anything particularly interesting, and people flock to them as like the mainstream, you know, he's the NCIS.
Yeah.
Versus there's the like the Breaking Bad over somewhere in the like the side of society,
or the Cinema Nouveau.
Yeah. And that's, people are like, oh, this is where it's really fun. And so it's like, it's kind of blending entertainment into the afterlife.
But I like that.
I like the idea that it would alter people's behavior, that why are you watching me? What is happening?
Yeah.
Because people might also start watching you because it can still give you that future thing of, oh, there's a plot against this random guy. And that random guy starts to have spectators and have these souls. And he's like, what the fuck? I'm doing nothing.
Right.
I'm living my life the exact same. Why am I all of a sudden in people's view? Why are people watching me?
Right.
Who's up to something?
Yeah.
You create you can still create the similar thing of what you're saying, of like, they can see the future and have that impact. But I want it to be like only based off of the current level of information.
Yeah.
Because then you would get too much into predestination and all that. And I don't like that.
It's fun to play with the information gap between the world of the living and the afterlife.
Yeah.
Because the afterlife, they could be omniscient and know everything, and just depending on different perspectives and want to see how it plays out. But the world of the living, they don't know what's going on. And that's where they're still left trying to figure it out. And so maybe someone with big spirit, you know, with you know, the higher horrific, the more horrific you are, people don't know. Does that mean that this person needs to be in prison because they're,
that's where you,
for protection? Or do they need to be ordained and become ruler? Trying to figure out, why is there so much attention? The impact of whether or not they're omniscient is more, I guess, really just for shits and giggles, because I like the idea sort of people start following one random person, not because they're the most interesting person in the world, not because they're perspective is more enlightened or anything. They just know that at some point this guy is going to trip in front of a royal procession and cause an accident that ends up disrupting the line of succession and severing it completely. Uh-huh. Just, you know, they can see the randomness of fate and the intersecting plots.
All right, well, that's that idea. All right, so Ethan, give me your dish.
So I've been...
We're playing Baldur's Gate in the real world.
We're playing Baldur's Gate 3 in the real world, and I'm one of those... I struggle with failing dice rolls. Even in D&D, yeah. It's, you know, tabletop, it's different because there's no way forward. You just got to go. But in a video, like, I've ended up save scumming. It's driving me crazy, but it's
it's how it goes.
It's just how it goes, right?
Because you really want to see what happens when you succeed.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I'm playing a game, I can win.
Right. It amps up that sense of winning and losing. And so I started thinking about, well, that's sort of like in real life, that, you know, in real life, you're sort of making dice rolls on your choices and your checks. But you have no way, you just get that roll once, and maybe you get a second opportunity in life that's sort of equivalent to advantage, or you have inspiration where you get to roll a dice again to see if you succeed. But when you're playing a game, you can really pick and choose. And so my idea for the afterlife is, okay, basically you have won your life such as it was. Every moment that you've been conscious and experienced is basically one decision tree through the rest of throughout your own history. But there are hundreds and thousands and millions of others, maybe not infinite, I'm not sure. But basically the afterlife is you getting to play your life again as a video game, more or less, where you get to see and play out what would have happened if I had made this skill check.
Yeah.
If I had done this thing,
you can do all the counterfactuals of your life.
Exactly.
That's fun.
And you just get to go, and it can be a experiential thing but I am envisioning it as you are sitting on a comfy couch or in a comfy chair, and you have your bowl of infinite snacks and your infinite drink, and it's neutral. And it could be, it's not necessarily that you get to pick the best one and that's what you go with, right? Whole point is the exploration. And so it is morally neutral, because you can see both how you could have done better, but also how you could have done way worse.
So then you just experience, so like say, because any decision in a real life is has a compounding effect over the long term, but you don't get to see that. You just see the acute moment where you make the decision.
Correct.
And that's it.
Correct.
And you move on.
Correct.
So then you don't...
It's like an econ. It's bounded rationality. You make the best decision with the information you have at the time. There is no book telling you where all the cool loot is.
I mean, it's like a lot of decisions that you make that you would be like, oh, I wish I redid that. The impact isn't felt for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So do you get like an... do you get to feel like you see the immediate aftermath, and then you maybe feel the emotion of what happens over the course of the next couple of years based on that decision? Or do you just have no idea of what that, like, so say it's you moved from the small village to the big city,
mm-hmm.
and you want to know what it would have been like had you stayed in the small village.
Yeah.
The immediate like month or like day after that decision would be inert.
Right.
But the 30-year decision, like, that's where you really feel the effects. Do you get to feel out that 30-year consequence? You know, like, do you get to feel like, you know, you make the decision and then you just have like an emotional reaction, or you kind of like see vignettes over the 30 years? How does it play out with bigger decisions, which are the ones that you're most like, everybody in the real world, the regrets you're going to have of like, I shouldn't have left this person. I shouldn't have taken that job. I shouldn't have moved there. I shouldn't have done big things that had like multi-year impacts. So how do you play out that? Or do you not?
Good question.
If you confine it to a video game, then you get too much into the small moments, because video games are small moments and not real lives.
Fair point. I don't think this is the type of thing where we're really getting into the nitty-gritty of the small decisions, unless they are small decisions that would somehow have a big impact.
Okay. So then how are you handling the big decisions?
I think in the same way. It's really, you just get to explore what would have happened if you had gone down this path, because it basically eliminates entire other worlds of the game or other parts of it.
So then you're living for so you spend 30 years then feeling the experience of having made that decision.
Yeah. Okay. And just trying it out. And then you get to try out all the different combinations.
Okay, so it's
in whatever way. We're talking afterlife. This is eternity. Yeah.
It's the time thing. And I think it's the framing that caught me off of it's a video game. You redo the dice roll and see what happens. It's like, no. You're redoing the dice roll and then watching the whole game play out based off of that. So you have, you see the whole experience based on a big decision or a decision that you make.
Right.
The full gamut. So you can relive your life a million times.
Just for curiosity.
Because you're not actually fully living it. Or are you? Do you emotionally feel like you're living it? Or are you just are you a spectator watching it play out?
I see it as more of a spectator. I don't think you're necessarily reliving it. I think it is more a bit third person, where you are sitting watching it play out.
Hearing the story.
Yeah, with the knowledge of your full life. It's not like a reincarnated where you're doing it again. You're watching it happen. And there are parts of it where I imagine you can skip cutscenes after, seen your first birthday party 8 million times. You're skip.
You're watching your movie, it play out as a movie, but a
choose your own adventure.
A choose your adventure, full 360 degree movie, but you are meta aware that you're sitting in this infinity chair.
Correct.
Somewhere, and this is not real. And the real version is the one that you did experience.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to make it as neutral as possible. Yeah, it is very depressing in some lights. It is also very empowering in some lights. It is very morally bad in some lights. It is very morally right in some lights. It's just life. It's as neutral as life can be.
I think it's really cool as a framing device for a story, for a book or a movie, where it is the guy sits down in the chair.
Yeah.
That's the first scene, is he sits down in a chair and starts playing back memories and becoming familiar with the idea that he can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then really learning what mistake, and you don't know what his life was, and you learn about his life through the regrets that he has.
That's right.
And you don't know what the decision he actually made was.
Yeah.
Very much hinging on a couple key fuck ups in his life or decisions he really regrets. And you only watch him do different versions of it. So you don't really know what he actually did.
Right.
Until the very end, where he's or maybe you never do. Maybe you leave it ambiguous that it's the idea of somebody's life playing out in the way that they hoped it would, but you don't know how it actually played out. And that's kind of the point, is fantasy is ignoring reality.
Yeah. Or altering it in some way.
Yeah.
In this case, it would be ignoring it.
Yeah.
And that would be the fun, and it would be a good TV show too, where it's episodic, where every episode it's what if Kyle went to,
I think
Kyle moved to LA?
I think it works as a good, I moved to LA, minus the fear of the big one.
Well, yeah.
And cars, fuck cars. I think it would work really well as a mini series or a limited series of, here's an 8 episode thing of seeing the deepest, fucked up part of someone's psychology in this weird lens of you see the positive side of a fucked up part of them, because you see what they hoped it would be or what they wished it would be, but not the reality. What they were trying to do, but not what they actually did.
Because what is one of the biggest truths of reality is that intent doesn't always matter. It's the impact that matters.
Well, and it would be really interesting to see. And because I think now we're coming to this a full on philosophical discussion.
Sure.
It's at the end, if you live your entire life and you die, you want to replay the memories from your 20s when you didn't have your shit together yet. You didn't understand stuff. You didn't know what you wanted. You didn't have the wisdom that you had when you were 80. And what if you got to see what that wisdom would have actually led to had you used it then? Because it may have led you to a worse life too.
It very well could have.
The lack of wisdom could have been the thing that made you who you were and made your life better. And maybe if you were too wise, you would have fucked up and you would have been too self-conscious. I don't know.
If you were too, if trusting your gut worked out well for you, then And or, even though, you know, you have perfect knowledge, but you were, you just had a chip on your shoulder about something that went wrong after the fact. And you fixated on, you know, like in Napoleon Dynamite, when the uncle keeps going back and obsessing, he's like, oh, if Coach had just put me in, I knew we would have gone state. I knew we would have. It's like, well, yeah, maybe that would have happened. Maybe also you'd have thrown out your shoulder and died.
Yeah.
Like, that's an extreme version, but it's entirely possible.
I'd love to see the story of the person who's uber confident and was like, my gut instinct, 100% right every fucking time. I know what I'm doing. And yep. And they play back, and every single time they were wrong.
Yeah.
Like, their gut was way off, and yeah. It turns out they're an idiot.
Yeah.
And, like, everybody around them was like, oh my God. You know, like.
Tomorrow on Armchair Elon Musk Diagnosis.
Don't bring him up. Don't bring him up. What are you doing? What are you doing? Get the fuck out of here with that shit. We don't bring him in. That's yeah.
And we've been talking about this from big decisions or like, yeah. You know, very confident decisions. I also like it for very, you know, mundane decisions.
You earlier did say you don't like it for that. Just pointing that out.
True. I think mundane, but I don't mean mundane. So, yeah. What's another word? There are degrees of significance. And by that, I mean, little things like, you know, when you're a tourist in a new city and we both like to wander around and you walk out of a store and you go right. What if one time you turned left?
Yeah. Or like, what if it's a consequential day that you know existed? Like, this was a big day in my life. I'm going to butterfly effect it.
Yeah.
And say, I didn't have coffee that day. How does it play out?
Right.
Do I have a bad interaction that prevents any of the cool stuff that happened from happening? Or if it's a bad day and you just say, What if I slept better that night?
Yeah.
And does that entire day go differently? Does my life go differently? Yeah, that's fucking
yeah. It's wild. It's you could play around with it. And again, this is the afterlife. It's eternity. So yes, there is infinite time to explore.
Yeah.
So yes, I imagine you might start with like the big decisions. Like, what if I went to the other college I was thinking about going to instead of the one that I went to?
Yeah.
How would that, you know, what if I had studied, in my case, like, psychology instead of religion? What would that have looked like?
Did you study religion?
I might have. What would that have looked like? You know, because those are totally big diverging branches, but I like your point of, all right, let's get down into this day that I failed this test. Yeah. What if I slept better and got an A on that test? What would that have done?
Yeah. I think this is an interesting episode because it's clear that neither our ideas are really bounded by the genres that we are playing with. Because these are both like, yours in particular, we're hanging out in real world modern 2024 because this is a very interesting concept to be applied to like a modern, like, you know, just straight up novel.
Yeah.
We're not playing in fantasy and sci-fi in the same way.
No.
You know, we're playing more in the space of The Good Place where it's like it is escapist and fantastical, but it isn't fantasy. There are no knights. There's no magic. And that's the interesting thing about afterlives is that they are timeless and they are like, they are agnostic of setting because of the way, like, unless you, like, you can make them very like grounded in a setting specifically, but I think your idea in particular, we're having a lot of interesting like thoughts playing with it right now because we relate to it so much more.
Yeah.
Because we are regular human beings.
Right. And we have also played video games. So we know what that experience of getting frustrated over making the wrong choice feels like, and so you can relate.
I'm more thinking about my real life about being frustrated at making the wrong choice.
But the two of us and our anxiety, this is just a great wish fulfillment version of that. What if I just done that other thing right?
Yeah, true.
I just ruined everything with this one small decision. What if I had worn a suit that day instead of a khaki and pants?
But 100%. But also like wild shit of like, what if I bought Amazon stock in 99, you know, and then what would my life have been like? I was a child, so I wouldn't have been able to probably do it. But what if I somehow convinced my dad to buy a bunch of Amazon stock, you know, like I was, what if I killed baby Hitler? You know,
it's all what if. And I think, I think keeping it bound to decisions that you made in your life,
which makes like where you sit down in the chair and there's a catalog that you can pick from. You don't get to just freewheeling go through all 87 years of your life and just pick the different moments that you want to play.
And then go do whatever you want and then go buy Amazon stock. Because who would have known if you didn't know when you were 10 that Amazon was going to be what it is?
Yeah, then you couldn't have made that decision.
Right. If you didn't have the opportunity to buy Amazon stock, then you don't. That's not a decision tree in your game.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
If you did have that choice, if grandpa said, I'll buy you this shiny bike for your birthday, or I'll buy you an Amazon stock, and you pick the bike, then you get to see what would have happened if you got the Amazon stock.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would have picked the bike, but
I mean, I don't know what I would have picked. I'd have to live this version of the afterlife.
But then you get to go back and try it again.
Yeah.
And do either way.
That's cool. I think that's that idea wrapped up.
Yeah. That's the end of it. Save game.
Good button. All right, so then let's move on to some frozen lasagna. Give me that quick little 1 minute idea.
Press ding.
Ding.
Ding. The circle of life.
The circle of life.
We all know that the matter of our bodies gets returned to the earth and turned wherever it goes. Our consciousness and our influence follows wherever our bodies go. So let's say, we are buried, we turn into grass, and bugs eat us. Well, then part of our influence, we get to live through the rest of that bug's life until it gets eaten by another thing. And then our influence stacks with the influence in the bird's head of all the other people that have gone in. So basically, every experience that you as an individual have is being subtly influenced by the decisions and experiences of millions of souls that you have absorbed throughout moving through the circle of life and absorbing the ambient energy and stardust from other people.
Ding.
That have already died.
All right. There you go.
Ding.
Okay. So what if life was just level one and you die and you go to basically the exact same world, except for it's only populated by people who had died previously in level one and are now here in level two. So the people you were just with in level one, they're still in level one. You don't see them, but you see all the people that you know have died over the past, 20, 40, 60 years.
Yeah.
And then there's other people who have already moved on to level three. And you kind of just repeat, you kind of reset these new cycles where you have all your skills, all your, all your knowledge, but you have all your reputation and all your relationships. So good and
bad. But only with the people who have died?
Only with the people who are currently in your level.
Got it. Okay.
So by the end of your life, your arch nemesis may join your level and kill you there and move you to the next level.
Ooh.
There might be, if you were a bad person in level one, you get to level two and you have a whole new chance to start over, but then some people might not forgive you for that and might say, well, you assassinated the king, fuck you. But you could have killed yourself because of the guilt, and then you show up in level two and guess what? Guilt's still there, baby. There you go.
Dig it.
All right.
Well, what stuck for you, Kyle?
I already kind of waxed on it, but I think it's the idea that your idea is like such a good framing device for a story. And the idea of it being applicable to like a modern context, which is just, we are primarily a fantasy based podcast. So it's like when we touch on a modern thing it's kind of fresh.
It's jarring.
Yeah. It's like, it's spaghetti, but with like, without any tomato sauce. It's just like a weird, like lemon sauce. You're like, oh, this is kind of fresh. I don't know.
It's new. It's different.
Yeah. It's new. It's different. It's weird. And I really like playing in that sandbox, but I like the idea of getting to, like, I have this like meta understanding of the story you're watching and the what ifs, and that the main character has zero agency. They are not playing anything out. They are not going to do anything. They are just going to process the regrets of their life.
Yeah.
In a weird way. Yeah. I really
enjoy that. And the relief too. That's important. Of like, I dodged a fucking bullet.
Yeah.
With this one.
Yeah. Cause it could also be, I regret this and I no longer do. Like processing regret doesn't mean learning to.
I see what you're saying. It, yes. Yeah.
It could mean relieving himself of regret or fully becoming regretful.
Yeah.
Either one, because it's just, oh shit, this is how it could have gone. And yeah, I think that's just a cool idea. I like it. What's it like for you?
You said something really impactful, that afterlives are, as a topic, are a little bit more agnostic from tone or setting. And my instinct at the time was to say, well, that's actually wrong, because afterlives are so often based in the cultural tropes of the afterlife where they were developed. Mm-hmm. But that's not the afterlife that we're not discussing, like underworlds or anything like that. We very clearly made the point, like, this is not the afterlives that religions promise. This is literally what just happens.
Yes. This is the afterlife that you get.
Right. And so it's completely agnostic, and which means that you could have a fantasy setting where the heroic paladin dies and then wakes up in front of a video game controller, and you're like,
what the fuck?
And they figure it out, or maybe there's a tutorial screen, but they still have to figure it out because it can be agnostic.
Yes,
and vice versa. We in a sci-fi world, you can die and then you end up in a Valhalla, Viking style mead hall. Yeah. You're like, oh, well, this is different.
I'll take it.
I guess I have to take it. No other fucking choice.
Yeah. What do you do?
But I like that idea that the afterlife does not have to be bound to the specific tropes or cultures that you are toying with or playing with in your story. It can be literally whatever you want. And I like that. I think that's fun.
All right. There you go. Well, that's what stuck for us. Let us know what stuck for you. Email's in the show notes.
Thanks for listening. See you on the other side.